online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the following after show here on AfterBuzz. And that song was the end of this last episode, yeah. Exposed. It was a nice little montage.
Extra creepy.
And it's called A Drowning, and you know what? I can't remember now who it's from. It was a really weird name. But if you look it up, it's
How
A Drowning.
How to Destroy Angels.
Thank you, Alexis. How to Destroy Angels. Thank you so much for that. Really cool song, actually. I was digging it.
That's
anyway,
the coolest band name ever.
It is a pretty cool band name. That's why I'm like, I couldn't remember. Anyway, I am your host, Nando Velasquez. You can find me on Twitter at NandoVel, N-A-N-D-O-V-E-L. Let me start on the far end with you guys.
Well, hey, everybody. I'm Sean Overman. You can find me at Sean Austin O on Twitter and Instagram.
Hi, I'm Pegarad. You can find me on Twitter at Pegarad. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
There we go. And introducing a new member to us. That's why I was saving him for last. Introduce somebody new. Michael Drew is joining us on the panel.
Yes, I am. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and we can find you on Twitter.
Yes, Michael Andrew. Twitter is Michael_Drew. That's Michael E-A-L. I have to say that all the time because I spelled
it
wrong.
Because
Becca spelled it wrong, and that hurt my feelings. Instagram, it's just Michael Drew right across.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, that happens a lot on here.
Oh, Becca. Thanks, Becca.
Just kidding.
Not good. That's okay. Anyway, thank you so much for tuning in. We're on live right now on YouTube. If you want, you can join the conversation there. Also, our hashtag is ABTV following, and you can feel free to tweet us during the week on that. So let's get started with this episode.
Yes.
I gotta admit, this season has been improving on me a lot more. Last week's gruesome death, and then this week a lot of deaths this week, actually. Nothing too major, but yeah, it's definitely a bit creepy.
Yeah.
And stuff's definitely happening. What do you guys think so far?
I loved it. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of disturbing images that are stuck in my head that will probably not go away for a couple days.
That guy in Wyatt's club or whatever, Wyatt's little thing. Yeah.
Oh, the Jesus.
Jesus analogy, I guess.
The whole S&M thing. Master, have you come to release me from bondage?
Oh, boy. I sometimes I'm surprised. This is 9 o'clock on a broadcast network TV. I get a little surprised by some of this sometimes.
What did you think he said, hey, sir?
I thought he said, hey, sir.
That would be kind of weird.
Master.
Like, hey, sir.
Hey, sir. Hello, sir.
Hey.
Good time of the morning
to
you.
Do you mind taking off this barbed wire? It kind of hurts.
That would be weird. I think he just wanted to keep it on. He's just like, hey, glad you can come to my commode here. My little area.
He's enjoyed the crown of barbed wire.
Yeah.
And around his crotch area, too.
Yeah. Was it his crotch? Did he have on the crotch?
It was everywhere.
Was he nailed in?
He was bound.
Like,
It kind of looked like, it reminded me of the crucifixion.
Yeah. It reminded me of the crucifixion, but I can't remember if his arms were outstretched or not. I don't know if they were.
I think they were just outstretched. I don't think he was nailed.
Okay.
That would be too permanent.
To be honest, that's such a hard scene to even look at and try to repeat. Oh, well, let me see where his hands were. Let's rewind it 5 times.
It was such a quick scene.
Thank goodness he was wearing black underwear.
Wow, you really noticed. You took care, Sean.
Good eyes. Good eyes.
Let's talk a little bit about how this episode starts, because we're dealing with the aftermath of one of the task force who died, Jeffrey Clark, and we saw that gruesome death in the box. And we open up really to Ryan having a nightmare.
Again.
He has a lot of those. In the previous seasons, he had nightmares.
Well, he's a tortured soul. Yeah.
Yes. How could he not have nightmares?
Yeah.
I have nightmares.
Yeah.
You know, just one episode, I'm like, all right, I'm not sleeping tonight. So I don't see how you can't.
Yeah, absolutely. So he's dreaming about Gwen being trapped in that box, calling out to him, like, come here and help me.
Oh,
you know,
that
was. Although for a second, I thought it was real life. And I thought it was Gwen being shady and being like, Ryan, come here, help me. And then she was going to, like, do something.
That's a real big, especially for the top of an episode.
I know, just whatever.
You
I just
really?
Don't, I don't trust trust her at all.
No. Well,
yeah. I don't either.
And, you know, I think just as important as the box, we see blood on his hands, which I'm sure signifies this is an ongoing theme when it comes to messing with Ryan Hardy, is that all of these deaths, everything that happens is on his hands.
Right. And he always blames himself, too. He takes takes all the deaths to heart, and he makes himself responsible for it.
Like a good Catholic boy should.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So we see him wake up. We see Gwen there to give him a nice little hug, you know, at home. So, you know, we see him dealing with that stuff. We see also the task force still dealing with this. They're on the hunt for Neil. You know, Ryan, you know, he knows how to find these people. He already figured out that that this was their plan B, that they had to improvise to get this guy. He wasn't part of the original group, and they're already looking for cases in the past.
I mean, how did he come to that conclusion?
He's Ryan.
I know he's Ryan, but I was like, really? Like, you just knew that that was plan B, and...
He was a professor. He was an FBI agent.
He wrote a book.
He wrote a book on the serial killer. How could he not be this resourceful?
Yeah. I don't know. The way he explained it, it almost seemed like common sense. They busted the guy that they were supposed to go to before, so they had to come up with a new guy. So, and this is such an interesting death that they looked back at case studies. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, the way he said it was like, oh my God, he's brilliant. Yeah. So I totally believed it. I totally got it. So, and that's just me. But we see Gina Mendez confronting Ryan about this press conference they got to do. And look, the big reveal besides, you know, Clark dying, a minor member of the task force. Sorry, you're a human being, but you weren't really, you know, you're not Max or Mike or Ryan or Gina.
He was minor, even though he sanctioned the Black Ops.
He sanctioned it. But he got to confess, and he confessed about the Black Ops task force and that people were killed. So now here comes Mendez having to go up in front of a press conference to talk about the death of an FBI agent. And Ryan, of course, doesn't want anything to do with it. At first, he just wants to go on the hunt for Neil, and not knowing that it's Neil. And if he doesn't go, it looks like he's avoiding, but he has to show up. And Gina says, well, if I go on there and say this didn't happen, am I lying?
She knows.
Well, that's what I love. I mean, especially when Ryan says, well, you know, I could tell you everything and I want to tell you everything, but there's certain advantages to not telling you. Yeah. I think pretty much that's like...
And I think she's with that. She's right? She's...
Yeah, okay. I think that's pretty much saying, I'm not going to tell you that I did it. So this way you're in the clear. So you do whatever you want to do. And, so very interesting. So, yeah, the task force is definitely reeling from this. We see the press kind of hounding Gina and Ryan. But one thing that happened in the press conference is we get to see sketches of Daisy and Kyle.
Yeah. And then Kyle's like, that doesn't look like my nose. I know. And you are way hotter than that, Daisy.
And we have Daisy totally freaking out.
Yeah.
Saying, oh my God, how can we have kids now? Everyone is going to recognize
all
us.
All of a sudden, she's domestic. Like,
That was really random.
Isn't that weird? You know, she goes from like insane killer to like, I want to be, have a white picket fence. Yeah.
What about her future?
I don't know if we were watching it together. I don't know if you caught at one point later on in the show, she said she called the dog walker and Ross and Rachel are okay. So
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, you guys were in the middle of something. It was a really minor thing, but I caught it.
Is that a Friends joke?
Yeah,
that's a Rachel.
She has dogs. They have dogs named Ross and Rachel. And they were like, and she was like, and she said something like, and they don't really miss me. And then Kyle was like, well, of course, they're just gonna, you know, they're being fed. They don't miss anybody, or they're happy as long as they're being fed, or something like that.
I liked how the moment she said she's not gonna have kids, he instantly was like, wait. Are you pregnant? Like, he was about to be like, whoa, I'm down with killing, but being a daddy.
Wait a second.
We can only kill for 9 more months, man. Yeah. Then we got to go into hiding.
We can kill for a certain amount of time. But yeah, we definitely are learning a little bit more about Daisy and Kyle from this episode. Basically, seeing how she freaked out and hearing her talk about home and everything they've worked for. And we'll get a little bit more into them. There's one thing I kind of glossed over that I don't want to gloss over because it's a small part, but I think it still kind of hits on the theme that Ryan is building from season one, is we get to see Jeff's wife, Anna, come into the station right after the press conference, and she pretty much blames Ryan,
which is
on
awesome.
The death of her husband.
Yeah, but even before that, the conference, how he wasn't really supposed to be answering questions, but he takes the podium and really speaks to Mark through the TV. He's saying, you know, he calls him a coward and I'm coming after you. And that's where we see Mark
go bananas.
Yeah, that was pretty funny because Mark, this whole thing, this whole plan was to make Ryan Hardy and Max and Weston to be, like, exposed to the public, right? Yeah. But it really had – Hardy was able to get up in front of people, and he totally redirected it. Yeah. It had the reverse effect, and it made Mark freak out.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess he didn't realize – I mean, the press didn't really throw anything at him. Except for that one guy,
Warren.
But
we got to know him for a quick minute.
I loved Ryan. I mean, Ryan knew exactly what to say. He called Mark Gray. He said he's a delusional coward and a malicious killer. And I mean, he's pretty much just calling out.
Yeah, and he knows how to get to him.
And your time is short because I'm on the case. Yeah.
He looked right to the camera. I'm coming.
I'm coming
for you.
I thought it was so hilarious how Mark comes into when he's watching the TV when Kyle and Daisy are watching TV. Mark comes in and is like, hey, why didn't you guys call me? And then the last thing he says before he leaves is, I can't watch this. He totally flip-flopped right there.
It's amazing to see. I love seeing Sam Underwood work like that. He's just like taking on all these personas and everything.
I just wanted to touch on what you said before about Anna, the wife.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just like, I felt like it was just extra salt on the wound of Ryan. Because that's like the one thing he doesn't want to hear. You know, like, oh, by the way, it's your fault my husband's dead.
He already blames himself.
I know. So it was like extra, like, oh, I guess you're right.
I already didn't know.
And I think what's interesting, too, and I got to see this more than once, so I didn't notice it till the second time, but, you know, when Ryan was trying to, like, appease her and be nice to her, she's like, look. My husband told me everything. We have no secrets. Ugh. So I know he was protecting you. So it
was become more nightmares.
Yeah, well, he become more nightmares. But you know, I think something important. She said we had no secrets between each other. So which comes into play later on, which I'll bring up later.
That's true.
But anyway, so let's talk a little bit about. Let's talk a little bit more about Daisy and Kyle right now before we get into Mark, because again, we're starting to learn more about them, and we saw them freaking out themselves because of the sketches, of course. So because of everything that seems to be going down, they decide to call a new character. So we finally get to see somebody else that's part of this plan
Julia.
That Daisy and Kyle have, and her name is Juliana, I believe.
Juliana? I thought it was Juliana. You're probably right. You're probably listening more carefully now.
Daisy's got her, like, red hair wig on.
I know.
It was looking pretty hot.
Just saying.
But here's another person I think that Daisy and Kyle are scared of. So, you know, just cracks me
up.
Is
this the first time we've seen this character? She was in
Juliana?
Yeah,
first time we've seen this character.
Okay.
So, brand new character, part of whatever, you know, group that Daisy and Kyle seem to be afraid of. And I think there was some really good clues based on what we heard about you. First of all, she's very prim and proper.
Yeah, she reminded me of, if you guys watch Breaking Bad, Lydia.
Ooh.
That's that kind of like...
Well, they're meeting in a diner.
Yeah, the diner, and she comes in her business suit, and she, you know, kind of gives the pamphlet and walks away.
And she's not as neurotic as Lydia was.
Yeah, that's true.
But she seems more on point.
Yeah, Juliana had a lot more confidence than Lydia.
Yeah.
She was like, don't look at me. Yeah. Don't stay
sit behind me. I'm going to pass you.
Exactly. Sit over there.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me directly.
And she's calling the shots. Daisy was kind of like giving some lip back because, you know, her guy messed up, her guy got caught, so we had to use Neil. But no, Juliana was giving it right back. And, you know, she said to them, she says, you know, don't let me, you know, I don't have to remind you about what happens if you fail. So they have something on these two. Either killing them or killing other people. Maybe they'll kill Ross and Rachel. I don't know.
Maybe they kidnapped Ross and Rachel.
They'll kill Ross and Rachel if they don't succeed.
They're delaying this whole... Whoever is behind all of this, they're really delaying showing us.
Well...
We're episode 3. I still don't know.
I'm going to say it now because it's kind of a prediction, but I feel like something that she said was a really big clue, and it was that we're on a schedule. So she says, we're on a schedule, and that's when she hands off the pamphlet on Max and we see the photo of Max that, of course, gets us all thinking that Max is going to be a goner. But, you know, the only other time we heard anything about, not maybe a schedule, but a timeline, is that Joe Carroll's up for death, you know, up for, on death row.
Oh, goosebumps.
So, So my guess is that whatever this schedule, whatever this schedule has to do with, it involves Joe Carroll as well. So I think that's the first, well, other than seeing Strauss and them teasing us last week, I think this is the first big clue that there is a timeline, like she said, a schedule, and Joe Carroll is soon to be a part of it.
There was something else that Daisy and Kyle mentioned. They all, when they were alone in the house, I think it was during the, when they were watching the press conference, they said something when they were talking about the whole kid thing. Oh, like we want to go back to our lives. And it was, that's part of, they want to leave at some point. They're not going to be sticking around until the end. They don't want to get killed. They're not going to sacrifice themselves for this cause. Mm. They're invested in it only for a certain period of time.
That is interesting. That's a good point because, you know, we see two kinds of followers. You know, we see the lemmings that are willing to die for the cause and they're totally like hoodwinked or whatever. Or they're convinced that their death is for the greater good. And then we see the ones higher up, you know, like obviously Joe Carroll is not going to kill himself, even though, you know, last season there was a little bit of time, you know, Emma not expected to kill herself. Some of these other ones are not expected to kill themselves or to sacrifice themselves. But it sounds like Daisy and Kyle are, you know, they want to go back to their dogs. They want to have babies, you know. So it does sound like in that, and maybe that's partly why they're so afraid of so many other people, because they're just trying to play it safe. They want to have their fun.
So they want to make it out.
Yeah, they want to have their fun. They want to kill, you know, a nice little couple at a hotel or here or there, whatever else. But at the end of the day, they want to be able to clock out and go home and have a normal life.
They want to be able to go to take trips to Disney World, then murder.
Then you just killed all these people. What are you doing?
I'm going to Disney World.
You know, just
that's why they keep wearing wigs and glasses and beanies.
They don't want to be caught.
Well, so does Mark, but Mark doesn't want to be caught either.
Mark's just crazy though. You can hide that under his crazy.
Speaking of Mark, there was one scene where he had his beard on and his hoodie, and Pega, you said he looked like somebody we work with
Steven,
here at the studio?
Steven, one of our producers.
Steven Lemieux.
If you watch what Better Call Saul, AfterBuzz show, you'll see him. You could definitely say that's Mark.
Yes, he looks like a murderer.
That's Mark. But it's funny, because Mark also...
Well, like with the hoodie on. Like the,
the hoodie. Yeah, absolutely. So
in the dark.
In the dark.
Blurry.
With shades.
Yeah.
A dark garage.
You know. So, that's pretty much, we'll get into more with them, but that's pretty much a lot of what we got from them. So we're learning a lot more about them, and we're learning a little bit more about the people they're working with or / for. So, still a lot to be remained there. On the other side, you know, we saw Mark freaking out, or Mark getting upset, because, he saw the ending of the press conference, and he pretty much saw not only did Ryan lie and say his whole group was exonerated for anything that, they were being implied that it was being done, but he also got called out and got called names and was told that Ryan was going to hunt after him. So, of course, Mark's throwing a tantrum.
Yeah. And he gets so upset. Okay, so he's watching this on live television, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So then he has enough time to put that sweatshirt on and get over to that conference while the reporters are still walking to their car and kill the guy.
He's fast. He's a fast killer.
For once a man.
Yeah.
He's fast and he's motivated. He's upset. So he's like...
He's got two people.
He's like natural caffeine.
Yeah. And he's got money. He's probably called an Uber or something like that. You know, got his car out or whatever. It's New York. You can get around a little faster than you realize in New York.
Right,
and who knows
subway.
How close he was. Yeah, exactly. I don't know how he can carry those bodies back to the subway, but he probably took the news van. But maybe or something.
After he killed Carl.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, because nobody knew they were missing.
Semantics, Pega. It doesn't matter.
I know.
So Mark decides to have his own press conference, am I right?
Yeah. I loved Warren being all badass walking back to the news van. Oh man, I totally laid into Ryan Hardy with those tough questions about did you kill anybody, whatever it was,
and I impaled his ass.
Yeah, I impaled his ass. And to see like a 180 a little while later with him like
he's like freaking out and
freaking
out.
I think I lost Warren.
I know. The random. I'm still not used to the random killings.
The quick
and the fodder. Like, even when they have someone, you don't even get a chance to know them, and they're just they're just fodder to someone's knife.
But that's what makes them so dangerous. That's what makes Mark so dangerous, and why I can understand why even Daisy and Kyle are scared of Mark in a way, because he snaps in a minute and he changes from Mark to Luke or who knows what, and he does crazy. I mean, look, they left to meet Juliana and they come back home to find the news crew at home and him just like, you know, tying them up and trying to figure out what to do with them.
Completely.
He's out of control.
I can't do it like this. I can't do it like, okay, guys, now I'm ready. Now I'm ready. Oh, I look like Mark now.
Did he dye his hair or was it a wig?
It's a wig. He puts on the Luke wig.
He keeps changing his persona and to look like Mark when he wants to do like a press conference or some kind of Skype call.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, that's his, that's what he looked like in season two, and he changed himself completely. So, obviously. So it's just really funny how, you know, he has to, in front of the camera, he has to show off his old persona. I think that's partly because he thinks he can blend better in real life if people still think he has long hair.
Yeah.
I think that might be part of it. But I think part of it, too, is just, I don't know, I guess the imagery of his mop head as opposed to his brother's, you know, more
slick back hair.
Yeah. From last season. So, but anyway, really, really creepy. I mean, we see, you know, as you said, you know, he just stabbed Warren like up the throat. Because Warren, he's like, I broke Warren. Oh, well. And he just stabbed him.
I guess you're going to have to do everything now, lady.
She just got bumped up to like,
I know, she's just
main character.
All the experience she's getting.
Yeah.
But it's like an internship.
But even then, like, you know, Kyle is still kind of like, he can't, you know, it's like he can't just put a poker face on when it comes to Mark. You know, it's like, it's just very telling that Kyle does not like Mark at all. I mean, he doesn't have to hide it to Daisy, obviously.
Right, she knows.
But, you know, even these two, you know, even the news crew, even the producer woman, we never got her name, you know, when she asks, why are you following him, or if you're his followers, and he just laughs at her.
Not a follower.
We don't follow anybody.
She is a really good interviewer. She got that out of him.
I know. That's good.
She should have been asking questions at the press conference. Maybe Ryan would have spoken.
I took it as him being more afraid of Mark than anything. I think, like, I always feel like when he's looking at him, there's this sense of fear, like, okay, this guy, I don't know, he's a loose cannon because he's so unpredictable.
Yeah, but he acts out like so much with him.
With the snide comments and all that?
With the comments and like the last episode when he brings him breakfast in bed and he's like, ugh, like get out of here and try, you know, to sleep or whatever.
Well, I mean, right? I know. I mean, there's a lot of manhood out there that when you're afraid of something, you kind of, you know, you do the snide kind of like
puffing out his chest.
Like, well, I don't care.
Yeah. Well,
anyway.
It is, but I think obviously, I mean, based on that comment and later on when the producer asks Mark about, you know, why do they laugh when they call his father, Mark thinks he's in charge. And Mark is being, you know, Mark is being really, really nice when he's 100% Mark, I think, you know, because Mark was the nicer one out of the two from last season. When Mark is doing breakfast in bed, when he's trying to be like, hey, it's gonna be a great day today, and he's trying to cheer them up, you know, Kyle's just rolling his eyes, you know, and because they just have no respect for him.
Yeah, but when they tell, I mean, when she brings it up to Kyle about how they've been laughing at you behind your back. Mm. Like, Kyle's so quick to, like, oh, no, we weren't laughing. Nah, man. Yeah.
She's lying.
Like, well, he didn't get super, like, okay, so even if we were lying, so what?
Right.
He was quick to try and change the subject.
Well, luckily, the producer, that was the perfect time for the producer to try and escape, and then everybody forgot about
and
it.
And die.
More or less. And die, of course. So that was, I almost was like, why did the producer
run upstairs?
And run upstairs.
Like, yeah. Scream chase scene where it's like, go out the front door. No, let's go upstairs.
Well, the front door was locked.
And she could have even smashed the window. It's like, why would you just bang on it, grab something in the room, and throw it at the window?
Like, it looked like a lame attempt to try and get attention.
At least barricade the door.
Yeah, yep. Something. Do something.
She locked it, though, right? Maybe they had a key.
She locked it. Yeah, they kicked it down.
They kicked it down. She did lock it.
Because Kyle's insanely strong.
Really, honestly, I think even a barricade, it just would have given her another 20 seconds. But as long as she's just wimpily hitting that door, you know, that window. I mean, the guy with the dog kind of looked up at the very end, but...
Too little, too late, buddy.
Too little, too late. And who would have thought that those windows would be impossible to open, I guess. Maybe they had that prepared, right?
But anyway, sealed them.
But you know, I think she shouldn't even have run because they were fighting with each other. And yeah. You know, it's funny because Clark kind of did a similar thing. Like, I think they just escaped a little too soon. They could have fallen. She knows they could have killed each other right then and there. She distracted Mark as he was confronting Kyle, yes. You know? And what's interesting too, to note too, is that, you know, maybe another reason why they're scared of Mark is because they can't kill, because I forgot to mention with Juliana, they can't kill Mark because he's part of this, whatever this end game is. Ryan Hardy has to be alive, so they can't have Mark kill Ryan Hardy, even though there were times today when he said, I should just kill them, and Daisy talked him off that ledge.
They need to stay in Mark's good graces, and they got to follow through their plan. Otherwise, yeah, they're going to piss off the people above them, the puppeteers.
So it's a balancing act.
These villains, so they overthink everything. Just kill the guy. Just kill Ryan. You know, like, we can't kill him yet. You know, it's just like, it's so comic booky where they're just like, where they capture the bad guy and they have this elaborate torture chamber. Like, shoot him in the head, dude. Just kill him.
If James Purefoy plays, Joe Carroll is the Joker, we got the Riddler running around right now as Mark.
Mark, okay.
Or Two-Face. Even better, Two-Face.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally. Actually, Two-Face.
He'd be more Two-Face than the Riddler, I guess. That's true.
And
so
it's just like, but we can't kill him yet. We have to make him pay. Like, guys, well, every time we do this, he beats us.
He beats, yeah.
We don't know the third season.
But they have to, they got to make it work for somehow. I don't know exactly. We still don't know what the end game is. We just know that it involves, so far it involves Ryan Hardy staying alive, which is, always seems to involve Ryan staying alive to a certain point. And right now, Mark seems to be also a part of this whole thing, too. Which, again, I think, you know, talking back about the time schedule and everything, I feel like, you know, Joe Carroll, or at least his followers, feel that, you know, it's for Joe to have revenge on Ryan, and maybe Mark, too, for what he did last season, and what Lily Gray, you know, what happened with the Lily Gray incident.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, and then lastly, before we move forward from this section, when they killed the producer woman, and Mark goes in, he sees the file on Max. So this was almost also another opportunity where the jig was up for Kyle and Daisy. But luckily, Kyle was the one who came up with the brilliant idea to offer a present.
Yeah.
At them as a present. And what we didn't know from before was that, you know, Max's picture was on there. There were some stats on there, which I didn't freeze to look at, but
it was like a dossier on
Max. Dossier on her. But they also said the door code to her apartment was on there, too. So I think that's a really important thing that we need to talk about in a little bit. Yeah, we need to talk about that in a little bit. We'll talk about it again. But that was really interesting, too. And then the other thing that I loved that you called, Sean, was the hugging.
Yeah. It was, we had Mark, he was standing in front of Daisy, and she gave him a hug, like, oh, okay, and then she touched him, and that's where we get some of that old Mark, like, oh, you can't touch me, like, yeah. I can touch you, but you can't do that to me, what the heck is going on here, and then he, like, backed off from her right away, but he didn't freak out, he didn't get, like, violent like he did last season with your love, Emma.
No, he didn't. But I think that's very interesting because obviously, you know, Lily and his brother could touch Mark. But yeah, other people couldn't. There had to be a certain level of trust. So I think the fact that, that at least in that moment, that Mark allowed Daisy to touch him, I think shows that he's trusting her. She obviously is the one that has to really keep the peace between Kyle and Mark. And yeah, I think that's a perfect example right there.
He is trusting her a bit because he just shuddered a little and backed off. He didn't freak out right away.
Mm-hmm.
And he smiled, too, like he was attracted to her. I felt that's the vibe I got.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Didn't you see that smile like creep up over his face when he was above her shoulder? Which? And then we have Kyle looking like, you bastard, you're hugging my lady. That's my wife.
It seems like there's always some kind of love triangle every season, so this could be the love triangle. I don't know, but it gives more reason for them to
hate
each other.
There's two love triangles.
Yeah, there's Mike, Tom, and Max.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Quick question.
And then there's me, Joe Carroll, and, I mean,
that's
not a triangle. That's a stalking. That's a stalker.
So you love Emma, and you love Joe Carroll.
Yeah.
I love Daisy right now, too.
Yeah,
Emma's dead. Emma's dead.
So no one's loving people who aren't, you know, homicidal?
Okay, I like Mike, too. I like Mike.
I like Gwen.
I would like Gwen if I didn't think she was a follower.
That's true. We don't know. The jury's still out on
like
that.
Max. I think Max is.
She's hot.
Max is hot, too.
And she's not homicidal. You know what I'm saying? So that's. I kind of like that.
But you know,
like,
the
we like
stability?
A certain type.
See,
I like that.
What the big turnoff is with Max is that she's a nagger. Nag.
Yeah, you're
time.
Right. I'd prefer the murder. They're more concise. They're more. They know what they want. I hear you. I hear what you're saying.
Okay. Well, let's scoot. Yeah, you know, it's all good. No, we all have our types. We all have our types. Let's move forward to let's talk a bit about Neil, because we haven't even talked about him yet, and a lot of this episode was about the manhunt to find Neil, and of course we get to see him, you know, taking care of his father again. We see like some good sides of him, being nice to that family in the shop, being nice to his dad, taking care of him. But then we see like the nurse who, you know, ironically the sink is clogged up, which I made me think about the box, like tight, you know, small things in tight spaces like that. And she's like, oh, the sink's all clogged up. And of course she lets the dad get away.
Yeah.
And Neil doesn't really talk to her. He just calls up the phone.
I couldn't believe when he said, oh, my father's nurse didn't show up for work today.
And you see her face like, wait, like, what happened?
Neil, I'm right here.
what are you doing?
Yeah.
Or she yelled, what are you talking about?
that would have been smart.
The administrators hear her.
Well, the victims aren't that smart here. They usually just paralyzed like, huh. I wonder what he's talking about.
In her defense, she doesn't know he's a killer. She probably thinks she just got fired, if anything.
Yeah.
But she's like, that's an odd way to fire me. And next thing you know, he conks her on the head or whatever and ties her up.
She's not getting fired. She's getting boxed.
Yeah.
Ooh, well, canned.
She's getting canned. There you go.
She got canned.
I like it.
I like that one.
Don't leave me hanging. Don't leave me hanging.
Hit him up. So we see the good side of Neil, taking care of his dad and being a certain kind of way, but then we also see the really scary side where he just, you know, and it's so, you know, he doesn't even get violent. He didn't even, like, when he made that call, it wasn't even emotional. It was like, it was very stoic, like, matter-of-factly.
I'm gonna kill this lady.
Well, that's what makes him dangerous, yeah, because, you know, he's not even making a reaction. And even, like, he's nice to that family, but then when he's fixing the box, and I guess he's taking Billy's box, and he's like, well, they'll be disappointed, but children are so spoiled. It's the way he's talking.
Super coddled,
that's what it was.
He really just doesn't like anybody, not even his dad.
You know what I've learned with Neil? He likes to blame people.
Huh.
Think about it, because he blamed the nurse for letting the dad out. Then later on, he blames killing that guy at like to steal his car. He blames that on Ryan.
Yep.
Well, he tells Ryan, you're the reason my father.
And then one more thing.
He calls Daisy and Kyle
and blames them for getting heat.
So he's
very like, it's your fault.
Did you see how scared they were?
Just a big baby.
Yeah.
When he called them, like, hey, I'm coming for you. They were just like, oh my God. Oh, no, this guy. I'm about to be in a box.
Wow. So bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a good point. I wouldn't say he has a victim conversation. It sounds like you're trying to say he's like an eternal victim.
Just,
like, I'm a serial killer because it's everyone else's fault. I don't know if it's that, but I get your point. But I think.
We just blame everybody.
Like in this episode, he used the word blame or fault so many times. Like, stop whining.
I know,
killing
man.
People.
He's an artiste.
Yes.
He's suffering.
He's into a particular style, lifestyle, and anything that kind of upsets that balance, he's going to be pissed off at. So, you know, and unlike a victim, he's willing to pay. He's willing to give, you know, to punish whoever it is that he believes is their fault, like the nurse, like Daisy and Kyle. Mm-hmm. If he ever gets out of that heat area, that he, you know, if he ever gets away and is able to, you know, like whoever, like Ryan, he wants to. Yeah. But I mean, we see this guy as he's really interesting. And you know what's so funny too, for someone that likes to put people in really tight spaces, he's a big, enormous guy.
Put him in a box.
I know. Put him in a box. And it's funny, too, to see him disappear so easily from the feds when they're running away.
Didn't buy it. Is that an FBI WTF?
When he ran upstairs?
I feel like it kind of
like,
is.
Come on.
How do you lose, like, a 7-foot tall, I don't know if he's 7, like 6-foot
he's
something
huge.
Tall, like 300-pound guy?
Yeah.
You know? I'm estimating.
Like they'll have some episodes. They'll have some episodes where the FBI guys are so on it, and then next episode like, oh,
not on the following. I lost them. Not on the following. Not really on the following. No, not too. I mean, a little bit this episode, I guess, because Ryan was brilliant to figure out how to find them, but then that was it.
Yeah, so he contacts Haley.
Oh, yeah, we should talk about Haley, because that was really cool. That was a flashback from season one. Haley, who worked in that, you know, had that club, and they had to give her the wire. That was a pretty cool moment from season one, and to see her come back was cool. And she, you know, she was there to give information to send them to Wyatt the broker, where we talked a little bit about that crazy crucifixion type of scene. And then we saw that, you know.
By the way, Haley was played by Afton Williamson.
Thank you, Seth. Yes,
welcome back, Afton.
You can find her on Instagram.
Hey, look at that. You know, one thing that I want to talk about with Wyatt, too, was the interrogation scene, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I was just going to say, you know, it brought me back. Yes.
No, because that was interesting. Because Max is being the voice of reason.
The good cop.
The good cop. Mm-hmm. And they're threatening to, torture him or whatever for the information.
Yeah.
And then later we see that, you know, she tells Ryan, I'm okay with playing this whole good cop, bad cop thing, but as long as we're just playing and, like, you're really not going to torture these people.
Well, I think that and Gina earlier calling, you know, Ryan about his, you know, his thing with Strauss. It was like a little throwaway scene, but at the same time, it's another person saying, I can only cover for you for so much. So here's Max kind of doing a similar line there. But what I also loved about that interrogation scene, it reminded me a lot of 24.
It was Jack Bauer.
You know, which in season one or before, you know, Kevin Williamson had said he loves 24. And when Fox got this, you know, the following, and they put it in the slot where 24 used to start at, you know, there was a lot of talk about how he wanted to make it very much like a 24 type show. So seeing Ryan Hardy, you know, up against the wall, like limited time to get someplace. We saw that last week. We see that a little bit this week. You know, that gets to show a little bit of the 24-esque type style.
Gosh, now that you mention it, he does remind me a lot of Jack Bauer.
There are moments when
it's like Jack Morrison in a horror world.
Yeah, like, tell me right now. You know?
He's a seasoned veteran working with a bunch of young bucks.
He just gets a lot more. He just gets a lot more downtime because he doesn't have a whole day in a season, so it's a little more time to sleep and have nightmares.
He gets to go home and shower with his girlfriend and cry in the shower.
Yeah, he gets those moments. You know, Jack Bauer did not have that. You know, Ryan Hardy's got it easy. Anyway, so you know. We you know, through Wyatt, they end up getting information to get to Neil, and we see the manhunt. We see Ryan, another smart move. He realizes that from looking around in the house that Neil's dad has dementia. You know, it's so funny, too. It's almost like I get it that Neil really cares about his dad, but his dad was such a liability that he, you know, he cost him a lot. He cost him dearly in trying to get away.
They really wrote it in there so obviously, and all the scenes with his dad, like, going out and the nurse being there.
Yeah.
And it was just like, his dad is his weakness. Yeah. No doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
His dad made him into that, probably because he was abusive. They kind of alluded to that in some of his soliloquies, right, or his monologues. But, yeah, his dad totally, it was his downfall.
Yeah, absolutely. No, his dad was his downfall. The GPS tracker that Ryan figured out. We got to see a little bit of the manhunt. We got to see Neil kill that guy because he had to change cars. He killed two people during that whole thing. He killed the second nurse. The second
with a quick little lump.
Yep. Yeah.
Jeez, we lost the company. We lost two people in one day. What's going on here?
Well, the girl luckily survived just before we saw that pithy needle go to the back of her skull, which was made me do that too. Yeah.
Ryan Hardy was there just in time.
But so we see, you know, we see Neil's dad has to confront, who has dementia, has to confront Neil once he sees what Neil did.
And he's like, hitting his head.
Oh, God, freaking out completely.
So good.
And, you know, we eventually see Neil get away by himself. Unfortunately, they already have the noose pretty much tightened around the area, unfortunately for Neil. So he ends up in a bit of a standoff with Max, Ryan, and Mike. And here's the FBI WTF. You want to talk about FBI?
Okay.
I talked about this. I coined this last season because the following had too many of these things.
What?
Death by cop. That's what we call it. Every time they have a lead, every time they have somebody and they have that person cornered, usually what happens is it's Ryan, it's Mike, it's Max, and then it's like some red shirt cop who just got his SAG card. And what happens usually is something happens and all of a sudden the bad guy, whoever it is, kind of makes a move, and then nobody else but the rent-a-cop ends up shooting the guy and killing the guy. Yeah. And it's like, oops. And it's like, you can't have anybody else around the bad guy except for these people.
Yeah.
Because it's guaranteed either that person kills him or the other thing that happens too is the person thereafter kills himself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a tip. Like, that's what
I thought. I thought Neil was going to kill himself.
Yeah. So it's so cliche.
I thought so too.
Yeah. It's so cliche.
It totally prolongs the story. They have to find another lead, another way to find Mark.
Yeah.
And I will say, I thought he might kill himself too because he's upset because of his dad.
He's gonna be like, you know, my dad hates me. No.
And he blamed Ryan. Again, the blood's on your hand. Well, not the blood in this case, but still, it's on your head.
Everyone blames Ryan.
Everyone blames
Killers,
Ryan.
Lovers, friends.
It doesn't seem like Neil would be the type to use a gun. I was surprised when he got out of that SUV. Did the nurse have a gun?
Yeah, where did that gun come from?
Yeah, where did it go? He never had a gun before because he uses the pithing needle and then he just, I guess, whatever knives. His mallets are, knives, mallets, to disassemble
the
joints.
Where did the gun come from?
Yeah.
Because if he had it, well, he killed the guy for his car, but he just put a knife in his throat.
Well, that's a quieter way of doing it, too. So I can understand not using the gun for that.
I know. He traded the kid for the GPS.
That would be awesome. Trade it for the GPS. I want to see that. I want to see that scene if it happens.
Hey, kid.
But that's
a nice Glock you've got. You want to switch it up real quick?
Like, okay. I was still thinking, this guy is enormous. This guy is big. You know, shoot to maim. You know, like, again, I can't see Neil really using a gun that well. It doesn't seem like that's his main instrument.
But Max's protective instincts came in.
Yeah.
Well, protective over.
Was that Max or Weston? Was it all three?
Yeah, they all.
Max shot him, right?
Well, they showed a close up of Max, but there were so many gunshots. I feel like all three of them kind of reacted when Neil put the gun up.
Yeah,
but
they all hit him center mass.
But it looked like they were like both Mike and Ryan were looking at Max.
Yeah, like she did it. I thought she did it. For sure.
Yeah, I thought they all three did.
I just find it crazy how, like, the guy you need to survive, they can never survive a gunshot.
Yeah.
But everyone else, they can survive gunshots, get stabbed in the stomach, but the one guy you need to survive, this big, chunky guy. Like, he gets shot a couple of times, and he's done.
I would think it would take a lot more bullets to go through that guy.
Ryan's been stabbed. I think he's been shot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's.
Joe Carroll's burning alive. He's everything, and he's coming back. This guy gets shot three times. It's like, it's over.
And we even had Luke last season get messed up pretty good.
Luke took forever to die. And this guy, Neil, who's, again, he's got a layer of fat around him.
Mass.
Enormous guy.
He's got
mass.
Gladiator armor.
And you don't, and I would think unless you purposely are trying to shoot him straight in the heart, I would think it would be really kind of hard to take him down right away.
Well, luckily the FBI just do center mass and they got him.
They got a dragon
right
season.
For the heart.
Look, at least it's a good season so far, because otherwise I'd be like, if it was season two, I'd be like, oh, they're just dragging us on. Here comes another loose end. Now they have to find another way to get at it. But no, I'm kind of digging this at least. So with Neil dead, it seems like Daisy and Kyle at least are somewhat safe again from the feds.
Yeah.
You know, because that seemed to be the connection to get to Mark through Daisy and Kyle through Neil. What were we going to say?
Nothing. I was just going to say how later on they're at Clark's funeral, is it? Funeral?
Yeah. We'll talk about the aftermath, all three. Yeah, so we see the memorial where Ryan's talking at the memorial. We see Max with Tom. That's the first time we really saw Tom this episode. And we don't see Weston. Because Weston is upstairs because...
And he can't face it.
Yeah.
He can't... Because it's his fault that Clark died.
And he's doing research at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, I find that interesting that it's on Ryan's hands. Blood is always on Ryan's hands, but Mike knows that it's his fault because he killed Lily Gray.
He's turning into a baby Ryan.
That's what happened last season.
Yeah.
He was really... And that was Mike's transformation to turning into Ryan Hardy.
Mike's the protege. So there we go. So that's what happens. But we see a nice little hug between Max and Mike.
And Tom's watching. I don't trust... Okay, we'll get into it.
We'll get into that second. So let's just go really quickly because we have very limited time. So let's talk. We talked about Mike. Let's talk about Ryan. Ryan asks Gwen to move in with him.
Mm-hmm.
To protect him.
I want want your walls to come down. I don't want you hiding anything.
No secrets.
As vulnerable as you can so I can murder you.
Yes.
Is that what you...
Yeah,
I think that's important. She's like, she has the stipulation, no secrets. I want all the walls to come
that,
down.
What man? Come on.
Women. Sorry. Ladies.
Ladies do say that.
Really honest with me.
Ladies do say that. No, he's got a point. But this, in this case, I think it's a little bit more just lady talking here.
Yeah, she's in her mind, she's just like, can you let me know, you know, in case you're seeing other women? Him, he's just like, she wants to know about the murders. You know what I mean? Like,
she's just like,
hey, can you be honest with me?
Are you seeing another serial killer?
No, are you dating people?
Are you seeing someone else?
Are you in love with Joe Carroll?
And then lastly, we get to see that creepy scene with Max going home. Mm-hmm. And it was a weird editing, first of all. There was a lot of weird, like, jump cuts to her walking
to the
in.
Lock.
Which I thought was interesting. And then we see Tom just pop up and scare her out of nowhere and invite her out. And what ends up happening is it looks like he saves her life unknowingly because Kyle and Daisy are inside.
Or doesn't save her life and is distracting her and taking her to dinner so that they can finish planting their
cameras. Don't steal
my
prediction.
That's a good one.
Sorry.
I was thinking, I'm thinking the same thing.
That's my damn prediction.
That's why I said it the way I said it. Because it looks like he might have saved her life or it looks like he doesn't. Now, don't forget, we do have, they had a dossier that had information on Gwen and her door code. So I think this is a perfect time to actually go into predictions, and we can talk about this. And we're going to go into predictions right now at the bumper, so that's all good. Here we go. We just love the bumper. We love the bumper. So, you know, I think an obvious question to ask in predictions is... Like, who? It sounds like someone's got to be a mole. Who would have Max's door code information except for a family member or someone she's dating?
Yeah.
Tom.
I got Tom.
Tom!
But we also think Gwen's a follower. So we can't. I know we're getting a little paranoid here. So are they both followers?
I'm not touching
Tom and Gwen are actually lovers. And it's like, hey, guys, let's split up. You go get Ryan, I'll go get Max.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That's
good. That's a good one.
I like that
one. That's bold. I like that one.
They're going to be the new cult leaders.
Yeah.
It's like they're going to be their kids. Everyone else is going to be their kids.
Oh, my gosh. So excited.
Okay, well, I actually like that. Is there anything else? I mean, we did see clips for next week's episode.
2 hours.
So if you don't like watching or listening to clips, you know, what happens next week, this might be the time you want to tune out. But is there anything? Yeah, I mean, we saw it.
Heroes will continue to die. It said something like that in Blood.
Heroes die while you still lie.
Yes.
Yeah. Something like that.
So they're going to kill off major characters now, perhaps.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That wall that it was written on looked like the wall to me of a firehouse. And the fact that it said heroes makes me think that there's like a mass murder of some sort next week.
Like firefighters or cops?
Firefighters, yeah. I mean, I think it'd be firefighters for some reason.
Because they don't carry guns.
Not because of that in particular, but just the fact that it was called Heroes and I think when, especially after 9/11, I mean, firefighters are referred to more in a way as heroes, especially in New York. So I would think that it has something to do with a firehouse.
Yikes.
And then anything else? I'm trying to think if there's anything else. There was a lot there.
I feel like they're really going to capture Max this time. They're putting up all those cameras. They want to get a routine. And maybe they don't want to capture her. Perhaps they want to get information. They want to record what's going on. They want to see maybe if she's having conversations. If Tom's not a follower.
Well, that's the other thing. It's creepy because Tom could have saved her. But then if Tom has access to her apartment, Tom should be able to get secrets too, maybe. I don't know.
Oh.
Unless Max is hiding from him. I don't. Because he's part of the FBI.
Yeah.
He's a different department, but you would think he would be able to share more with them. Anyway,
Gwen, really quickly, I feel like Gwen, her asking Hardy, hey, keep, you know, put your walls down, she wants information too. She's wired.
Yeah.
She's going to use that information, give it to Mark
or whoever
is in charge, and they're gonna put it on the internet and blast Ryan Hardy and his crew.
You're giving me indigestion.
Ooh,
yes.
That'd be cool.
Anxiety.
All right, that wraps up this week's edition for the following after show. So, guys, where can we find you guys during the week when we want to talk following and use the hashtag ABTV following or anything?
Well, you can find me at Sean Austin O on Twitter and Instagram.
You can find me hidden under my blanket because I'm so scared right now. But also on Twitter at Pegarad.
On Twitter, Michael Andrew, Michael underscore Drew, Michael EAL, and on Instagram, Michael Drew right across.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Nandovel, N-A-N-D-O-V-E-L. You can find us all here also on various other after shows here at AfterBuzz. Please rate, comment on iTunes, on YouTube. Thank you so much for tuning in live. And again, yeah, we really appreciate your feedback. So please comment and rate us on iTunes if you're listening on audio, on YouTube, or on AfterBuzzTV.com if you're watching the video. Thanks again, and we'll catch you guys next week for a 2-hour episode review.
Bye-bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.